is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
Hey, Hoopheads, find the perfect shooting machine for your team during Dr. Dish Basketball's Fall in Love with More Reps sale. Now until February 29, choose between two major offers: $2,000 off a Dr. Dish CT Plus and free shipping, or $6,500 off two Rebel Pluses. Learn more at drdishbasketball.com and follow their incredible content at Dr. Dish B-Ball on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Mention the Hoopheads podcast and save an extra $300 on the Dr. Dish Rebel, All-Star, and CT models. Those are some great deals, Hoopheads. Get your Dr. Dish shooting machine today.
Hey, this is John O'Connor, head girls basketball coach at Bennington High School in Bennington, Nebraska, and you are listening to the Hoopheads podcast.
Prepare like the pros with the all-new Fast Draw and Fast Scout. FastDraw has been the number one play diagramming software for coaches for years. You'll quickly see why Fast Model Sports has the most compelling and intuitive basketball software out there. For a limited time, Fast Model is offering Hoopheads listeners 15% off FastDraw and FastScout. Just use the code HHP15 at checkout to grab your discount, and you'll be on your way to more efficient game prep and improved communication with your team. Fast Model also has new coaching content every week on its blog, plus play and drill diagrams on its playbank. Check out the links in the show notes for more. Fast Model Sports is the best in basketball. Hello and welcome to the Hoopheads podcast. It's Mike Klinzing here with my co-host Jason Suckle tonight. And how's your meniscus,
man? Mine's good. Mine's good. How about yours? How's your what's good. Your status to your knee? Like, that's a better question.
I don't know. I guess I don't know. I don't know which knee. I'm not sure which knee that my ACL is still torn that I never repaired. But I think my meniscus is fine. So
that's good. That's good.
Unlike our friend Joel
Embiid, unfortunately, seems to be checked out for an extended period of time. Like,
4 weeks is what it said, though, on ESPN. That's what they were reporting, 4 weeks. That seems pretty optimistic.
Embiid's never coming back in 4 weeks. I'm willing to make a pizza bet with you, Mike. Would you like to make that pizza bet?
Well, I'm not. No.
What about 6 weeks? What about 6 weeks?
Pizza bet? No.
Okay.
Does he return
before the regular season is over? I mean, we're 8 and a half weeks from 9 weeks from the regular season being over, right? Like, because the
at
first week of
point,
April,
right? If you're
first
Philly,
week of April, so
yeah, I don't know. I don't see them rushing him back. I think it does. You wonder what Philly is going to do. First of all, you didn't know whether they were going to be active at the trading deadline right now because they have all the whatever they can open up close to two max salary slots next summer. But there was a lot of speculation as to what they were going to do prior to this Embiid injury. And now I don't think if you're Philly, what are you upgrading for when you have really no assurances that Embiid is going to be back? And if he is back, what he's going to look like? I think the odds of them rushing him back with his injury history doesn't make a whole lot of sense. And I think most likely, if I had to guess, I would say Philly probably looks at the Embiid injury, says, even if he comes back, we're not getting anywhere near 100% Joel Embiid. And it doesn't make sense. I guess if they could add a piece that could be a long-term piece beyond this year in an unbelievable deal, then maybe that's something they would look at. But I get the feeling that Philly's probably just going to stand pat. And if Embiid comes back, maybe you try to make a run, convince yourself that, hey, he's going to have had 4 weeks off or 6 weeks off or 8 weeks off, whatever it is. And now with him and Maxey, we can make a run. And then this summer, they look to bolster their team with one or two of those salary slots and picking up guys that they can plug in. But it doesn't make a whole lot of sense to trade out assets or give up that flexibility in the summer when you have no idea what Joel Embiid is going to be
Here's what I'm going to say. Mike, the Cleveland Cavaliers' door to the Eastern Conference, is it open now? I'm not trying to get ahead of myself here. And I know the Celtics are still right now the better team, but they've had some pretty bad losses of late. The Bucks seemingly have gone into a tailspin. Philadelphia has lost its star player. I'm not trying to I know we've played the Cavs have played some inferior opponents, but they have played some good opponents during this stretch. In the last 15 games, they're 14-1. Never a LeBron-less team in the Cleveland Cavaliers history has gone 14-1. Okay. Looking at the Cavs schedule for the next 15 games, 10 of them should theoretically be, you may as well just mark them down as victories. Theoretically, right? I saw someone tweet it earlier, but I don't want to try to pull it up. And I know we kind of did it last week, but we play
the month of February. The month of February, I think the two toughest games on the schedule are Dallas, the two games with the Sixers. I think the two games with the Sixers were the two toughest games. And now you have to look at those and say, those are games you definitely should win without Embiid.
Okay, so let's just go through the month of – let's just really quickly do this, and I don't want to spend too long. Wizards, that's a win. Theoretical. Once again, I want to just say these are all theoretical, okay? But the last 15 games have given me pause that we're not – the Wizards, the only game that was bad that we almost lost it was the Detroit game, right? That was almost a bad loss.
Detroit was close. Memphis was kind of close. Closer than you would want against garbage teams. Let's put it that way.
Okay. So Wizards and Brooklyn back-to-back. Okay. Those are bad teams. The Raptors, that's a bad team.
Yep.
Okay. The Sixers, that's a good team.
Home game.
Home game. That's a good team, but it's winnable because of the fact that Embiid's not playing. Even if Embiid was playing, it's still winnable in my opinion. Okay. The Bulls, that should be a winnable game. Okay. Then we get the All-Star game. Okay. So we get a whole week off. We play the Magic. I think that could be a theoretically tough game. The Magic are good.
At home, though. At home.
Yeah, home.
Should
then
win.
Then we play the Sixers again. Then we play the Wizards again. Then we play the Mavericks at home. And then we play the Bulls again. That is a terrible month. That is a terrible schedule. And then we start March with Detroit. That's what I like to see. And the Knicks theoretically is the best team we play over the next month, and that's March 3rd.
Yeah, you come out of the easy part of the schedule with back to back, home for the Knicks, home for the Celtics. So that'll be a good gauge on where the Cavs are at.
Can I just read you something really quickly I find interesting,
sure,
Mike?
Sure.
Did you see this tweet about Dante DiVincenzo's last five games?
No, but I know he's been lights out.
Well, including tonight, here they are. 32 points. This is five games ago. 32 points, five rebounds, four threes. 26 points, six rebounds, six threes. 20 points, three assists, four threes. 33 points, five rebounds, nine threes. 28 points, six rebounds, five threes. This is his last five games.
The Knicks get They get that Dante DiVincenzo, and the Knicks are going to be pretty hard to deal with. Not that they're not going to be hard to deal with already. You saw Brunson went down tonight, though.
Oh, no, I didn't. What did he do?
Sprained his ankle, although it looked pretty bad. But they said that he walked out of the locker room under his own power with no crutches or anything. So I don't know how serious it was, but he left the game. I don't know if it was the third quarter or the fourth quarter. He already had 27 points, and they won tonight against the Grizzlies. But he did go down with an ankle injury. So we're obviously at this point kind of talking around the Cleveland Cavaliers. So my question to you is, do we want to talk about the Cavs specifically? I know we just went through their schedule, but we want to talk a little bit about why they're playing so well and portends moving forward.
Here's the bottom line. Someone made a really good point, and I don't remember who it was, about the lineup situation and how JB has done actually for seemingly I'm going to give him a little bit of credit.
Give Bickerstaff
he's still
credit?
Complaining. He's still complaining too much to the referees in his comment the other night. You know that's BS.
Yeah.
Anyways,
yeah, he does. He complains. He complains nonstop.
The starting lineup notwithstanding, it seemingly he's put a situation where he's got Mitchell and Allen on the floor together with three shooters, and he's got. And then when they're not on the floor, Garland and Mobley is on the floor with three shooters. And that those three shooters are interchangeable. I feel like other than the starting lineup and the starting of the second half, Allen and Mobley haven't seemingly been playing a lot of minutes together. Is that, would you like rack your brain really quickly from what you're seeing? Like they have not been closing together. Is that accurate? Or have they been closing together?
Yeah, I mean they have not been on the floor together a ton since Mobley's been back. Now it's a very small sample size, but I do think there's more of a conscious effort to stagger the minutes, especially of Allen and Mobley. I think Garland and Mitchell are playing together a little bit more, but in a lot of ways, if you look at it and just kind of figure out, okay, they're probably going to start every game, play 6 minutes together, start the second half together, play 6 minutes. There you're at 12 of those minutes for each guy. Now you split
and they close
the
together. Those two have been closing
and
together. Garland and Mitchell have both been on. Garland wasn't on the floor against Memphis at the end. Only Mitchell was, I feel like. I know last game was didn't matter because it was over, but I feel like Garland wasn't closing the Memphis game, but I could be wrong in that statement. They're running together. They've played a lot the last week. I mean, they played four times last week and then they played yesterday. So I can't remember. I can't really remember, but I feel like Garland did not close the one day. Cause I remember him being not in on the floor. Maybe that's because they were still trying to work him back and whatnot. And the other thing too is if you keep getting production out, Caris LeVert has been playing in this stretch. You know, we talk about there's good Caris and there's bad Caris, and he kind of seems like sometimes he's Jekyll and Hyde. I feel like he's been way, way more on the good side of things during this 15 game stretch than on the bad. And I know he even missed a few games in the middle there, but I feel like he's been better. Like, I don't find myself every time he's shooting a three-pointer going, no, don't shoot that. And once again, like, I mean, even if Sam Merrill gets 12 to 15 minutes, you know he's banging home two or three threes in that 12 minutes, right? Like he's letting it fly in those minutes. And like, obviously that might be different in a playoff situation. Like you might not be able to put him out there as much. I know JB said after the game last night that he would ideally like a 9-man rotation, but because of how well Sam has been playing, that he's got to stick with the 10-man rotation. Because they've earned it. I think the guy before last night that I would have said should probably be the odd man out. You want to take a guess as to who I would say? Before last night, no, Dean Wade.
George,
I feel
Yang.
Like Dean Wade's been, but defensively he was so good the last two games, and you know he's been seemingly knocking down some shots. Which my dad, until like a week ago, would always say, "I don't know that I've ever seen Dean Wade make a three." Like he feels like, and I'm like, well, he is shooting like 37%, so
he's shooting 40%.
That's
right
been
now
a lot
season,
recent.
So.
Like I feel like, but. That notwithstanding, like once again, I feel like he was probably the guy in my, if you said, who would I rather take a shot? Would I rather have Dean Wade or Sam Merrill shoot the ball? And I know they don't play the same position, but I would definitely want Sam Merrill to shoot the ball just because quick release.
He's a better shooter. I mean, there's
better
no question
shooter,
he's a better shooter,
et cetera.
Yeah, there's no question.
But Dean Wade is probably better for us on the defensive end of the floor. Right? Like you agree with that? I mean, it's not like he's a super plus defender, but
Sam
he's definitely
Merrill
better.
Doesn't have the size. I mean, he doesn't have the size that Wade has.
So, anyways, what I'm saying is this, like I would probably, it's probably a situational thing, but I think, you know, I got really confused the other day when I saw Okoro had put a throw out there, and I was like, who is that guy out there? I don't even know.
Looks
that
like
man.
Colin Sexton, right? I always look at him. I think it's Colin Sexton.
I totally thought it was. Yeah, I agree. I just look at him like, I was like, he hasn't been in the team. Who is that guy? And then they were like, Isaac Okoro. And he's been playing really well too. Like, once again, we have to understand they're just in a good flow right now. They seem to have gotten everything back. Can this withstand? I think this should just withstand the month of February. Okay. I think it should continue to be good. It's whether when we get into the month of March where we have, March is rough. Like, we have to walk out of here, Mike. I don't remember. I know we went through the game, so I don't want to go through them again. But I think ideally we need to walk out of this month with 12 more. I don't know how many more games we have, but I would like to say at least.
You don't want to have more than two losses coming out of February. If you have more than two losses this month, I think it's a disappointment based on what the schedule is. That's how I would approach it. Yeah. However many wins that is, I don't know. But yep.
Okay.
And if they do that, they should be right there at the top of the Eastern Conference.
For sure. And I mean, like I said, Boston has kind of fallen off a little bit, right? They lost that pitiful game to the Lakers with LeBron and Anthony Davis didn't even play. Okay. They're just not playing as well. And in their last 10, like once again, in their last 10, they're 7-3. So let's be clear here. They're still playing pretty good, but there were talks that they were going to lose one game at home all season. Well, they've now lost three games at home. Okay. They've only played, they've played 24 games away and 26 games home, Boston. Listen, I feel confident that we're going to finish ahead of Milwaukee. And that's really kind of scary, but I just don't like what I'm seeing out of them. Their body language is terrible. You know, Doc Rivers, I appreciate your gesture in giving Adrian Griffin his money and the All-Star game. What a joke that is. He coached three games. He's the All-Star coach. They should have given it to JB. What the heck is this? And NBA, get it together. And I'm stumping for JB, and I don't know why, but it's ridiculous that Doc Rivers is the Eastern Conference All-Star coach. That is the biggest crock of baloney I've ever seen in my life. The guy's been coaching the team for three games. And by the way, have they won one game? No. They're 1-2 with him coaching. What a joke!
I'm sure NBA. Doc doesn't want to coach that game, right? He'd much rather.
Well, he said he was going to send his staff and go on vacation. That's what he said.
He's been on vacation since last season. How about
He's been golfing with Larry David.
How about trying to figure some stuff out with your team? I mean, I think that's the.
Well, half the team's going to be at the All-Star game. You're going to have Giannis and Dame at the All-Star game. You're going to have Giannis's brother who has to go with him to the All-Star game because that's what he's beneficial for. He's a cheerleader for his Giannis. He's terrible. He's terrible at basketball. I don't know if you saw that one play he made last week. Oh my God. Like, I think you're probably more athletic than he is, Mike. All right. Hey, at this point in your life,
sneaky athletic,
sneaky quick.
Yeah, baby.
Anyways, so my view is this, Mike. I think the Cavs could. I don't think they're going to catch Boston. I'm going to be clear here. I don't think they catch Boston. But I feel strongly, moderately, strangely confident that we could theoretically finish two with our current. If we continue on our current trajectory, the other teams continue to not. Play as well. I mean, once again, these teams that I'm talking about that aren't playing as well, you know, Milwaukee's 33-17. They're technically tied with us right now, but they're percentage points behind us because we've played two less games than them. Now they're currently losing to Phoenix as well, so we could be a half game ahead of them come after tonight. But like, you'd have to think that we have a chance to be two, right? I mean, I don't know. Where do you take? I know I've been talking a lot. So what do you think?
All right. Well, where do you want me to start with?
You start wherever you want. You go on.
All right. Let me come back to that question of whether I think they can get to two and just kind of talk about where they're at right now and what I'm seeing, what I like. So I think you hit on a couple really important points. I think one, LeVert has been very, very good and he's shooting the ball well. I think what's really happened to this team more than anything else. And I don't know what caused it. I don't know if it was just the fact that they had more shooting on the floor, but I feel like in watching them over the course of this streak and how their game has changed, it just feels to me like the ball moves a lot more. It moves on the perimeter. It's like one extra pass. It feels like you have less guys just putting on the floor and dribbling to nowhere. And then obviously it helps when guys knock down shots, which is what has been happening over the course of this streak. So you combine the fact that they have tightened up their defense, which is interesting when you figure that, I think going into the season, most people have said that Evan Mobley was your most impactful defender, and Jared Allen was probably right there in a lot of people's eyes, but I think most people would have said Mobley's the best defender on the team, and he misses a bunch of games and the defense gets better. And now since he's been back, the defense has not fallen off from that level that it's been at this entire streak. So I think, to me, the two things that I've seen that have made a difference is, one, the shooting. And when you move the ball and you knock down shots, it just makes the ball move even more, because now guys believe that the next guy, if I make this extra pass, this guy I'm making the pass to is going to make that shot. And then it just becomes contagious and everybody's passing the ball. I think Donovan has had a tendency during his Cavs run, and I think probably even while he was in Utah, of getting a little happy with dribbling the ball and taking forced one-on-one shots. And he still does that occasionally, but I feel like he's kind of taken a little bit of that out of his game and made that extra pass, which has made this team all the more dangerous. And I do think when you look at, as you said, the 10-man rotation, and clearly they have some guys who are limited on one end or the other. When you think about Okoro's been shooting the ball well from three, but he's just never going to be a volume shooter, and teams don't guard him even if he makes them. So you have what he brings to the floor defensively, but then he kind of takes it off their plate on offense. And then you think, well, Sam Merrill, great shooter, but struggles a little bit on defense. I think Niang is the same way, guy who can provide spacing. And whenever I watch him, I'm not sure exactly what I'm seeing or what I'm getting from him, but
it's not normally a good sign, is, Mike.
No, it's not. It's not. I can't decide whether I like what he brings to the table or I don't like what he brings to the table. He's got to be one of Bickerstaff's favorite guys because he loves to argue with officials anytime there's any kind of call. He definitely has an opinion on it. But I would say to this point, that signing has been a pretty good one. I mean, I think he's been a meaningful contributor at times. I just don't know. I don't have a feel for what he is in clutch time in big moments. Can he be on the floor during key runs in the playoffs? I just don't know whether that's the case or not. And then I think the bottom line is the team should continue to be able to perform well when you substitute back in the type of talent that Evan Mobley and Darius Garland have. You're obviously replacing two inferior players to those two guys when they're in the lineup. And so it feels like the things that they've been able to do with the ball movement, with the shooting, with the floor spacing, with the Allen Mitchell pick and roll and diving to the rim, that this coaching staff has to be able to figure out how to unlock some of those same things with better talent that maybe isn't quite as clean of a fit. I think part of it we talked about before is you got to stagger the minutes a little bit as much as you can. And maybe even though it seems like those four guys on the floor at the same time, they're your four most talented guys, that you'd want them out there, but maybe, just maybe, that's not the best way to operate this team, or at least not to operate it that way for 36 minutes with all those guys on the floor. And so I think if you can figure out, all right, we're going to stagger, and then that kind of clarifies what we're trying to do. And then can we tweak what we're doing when we have those four guys on the floor and really take advantage of what all of them do well? And it's a challenge. I mean, I think Mobley and Allen are both pretty good interior passers, so I think they can work together. But when they're both in there, it's definitely scrunched, because one guy is usually hanging out at the high post at the elbow, and the other guy's hanging out down in the dunker spot. And so that's two defenders that are now in the lane, which as we saw in the playoffs against the Knicks, when defenders are in the lane and you have two little guards and they're trying to drive in there and all the big men are near the key, it makes it really difficult to get where you want to go. And so I think that there's things that you can do to mitigate that in terms of movement and screening and action going on away from the ball, whether you want to call it secondary action or decoy action, whatever. I do think that there's things that can be done, and it'll be interesting to see as this thing develops exactly what Bickerstaff comes up with. I do think that the light schedule in February hopefully will allow them maybe to experiment with different looks, with different lineups, with doing some different things with those four guys, so that as the schedule toughens in March and we head toward the playoffs, that they'll be able to figure some things out that not only can they use in the regular season against the Wizards and the Pistons, but they'll actually be things that they can use come playoff time if they end up matched up with the Knicks or the Celtics or another one of the better Eastern Conference teams. I think the path is there for them certainly to finish number two. And I don't think they're going to get to number one. I do think at some point the schedule catches up with you, and this team's, I don't think, as good as the Celtics, but it's not completely out of the realm of possibility, because now let's jump to the second part of it, which is let's look at each one of these Eastern Conference teams that are kind of competing with the Cavaliers and sort of what, you know, sort of what they face. Like Celtics, you laid it out, right? They haven't played extremely well over their last 15 to 20 games, 11-6, kind of scuffling. And I think Boston, in all honesty, they're a Porzingis injury away, which, not that we're wishing any ill will on Kristaps Porzingis, but he's been injury prone throughout his career.
It wouldn't be unrealistic for it to happen, right? I mean, that's the thing.
Correct. I think Boston, in all honesty, I think, to me, I look at that team, and yeah, you can tell me that you're bringing Luke Kornet and Sam Hauser and Kevin Pritchard.
Hey, Luke Kornet didn't even see the floor when he got to the Cavs last year, right?
Right. So I'm just saying, like, if those guys, those are their seventh, eighth, and ninth guy, to me, it feels like you get any kind of injury with the Celtics and things could look a lot different pretty quickly for them. Now, look, the odds of, when you talk about Boston, Tatum and Brown probably aren't going to get hurt. Those guys are durable and they've played.
I don't know. Lots, maybe Brown will get hurt during the dunk contest.
Maybe. We'll talk about that a little bit later. But certainly it's certainly within the realm of possibility that Porzingis could get hurt. Al Horford is old. He could get hurt. So I think Boston's vulnerability is, if they're healthy, they're going to be really, really, really tough to beat in the Eastern Conference. But if they're not, suddenly that opens up some holes in what they do, and you got to start playing guys that maybe other teams can attack. So I still would expect the Celtics, based on the lead that they have and based on the durability of Jaylen and Jason, that they're going to stay at the top spot in the Eastern Conference, but who knows? And then you look below the Cavs right now, Milwaukee, as you said, they've been kind of a mess to this point. The Doc Rivers hiring and the firing of Adrian Griffin hasn't made a difference in their one loss record, but I'm not sure that it's made a meaningful difference. I think what's interesting is that Giannis is having an MVP season. If you look at his statistics, he's averaging, I think, like 31, 11, and 6. I mean, he's just killing it. I think the guy who really, in all honesty, has been disappointing and probably played below what they would have hoped. I just think Dame has had a lot. He's had some good games, but he's had a lot of stinkers in there where he's gone 3 for 16, or he's, you know, 4 for 12, or he's 3 for 13. It just feels like he hasn't played all that well. And
he's been consistently inconsistent, Mike.
He has. And he hasn't been to the same level that he was certainly last year in Portland when he had his best, probably, offensive season in his career. And he hasn't been nearly to that level this year. He's shooting overall 42% from the floor, 34% from 3. And I just don't feel like he's been as good. In the times that I've watched the Bucks, I just feel like he isn't having the same impact that he did when he was in Portland, which again, he's now the second best player, second option for Milwaukee behind Giannis. But it still feels like I'm watching him, and sometimes I don't feel like I'm watching Damian Lillard. I feel like I'm watching a version of him that's not nearly what he was during his time.
Like Klay Thompson?
He hasn't fallen off that dramatically. He has not fallen off that dramatically. But I don't think Milwaukee has gotten the Damian Lillard offensively that they felt like they were going to get. And then defensively, he's, as has been talked about over and over again, the presence
he's
of
terrible,
Damian Lillard.
Mike. He's so dead. Right, he's
in
so
place,
bad.
In place of Jrue Holiday is just a huge, huge downgrade. And to this point, the upgrade in offense hasn't clicked in where you can overwhelmingly say, hey, what we gave up on the defensive end of the floor, we're more than making up for that on offense. I think right now
the balance is not there, Mike, right? That's what you're saying. The balance is not there.
I think the best you could hope for now is to say that it's sort of neutral. But I think Milwaukee thought that Dame was going to be a supernova on offense and that would allow them to kind of live with his defense. And at this point, he's been good on offense, but he hasn't been to the level that you would expect from Damian Lillard. So I think Milwaukee definitely is vulnerable. Now, that's not to say, look, they could figure it out. The two of those guys are theoretically as good as any duo in the entire league on the offensive end of the floor. And as was talked about before Doc got the job, the amount of Dame pick and rolls with Giannis has been a lot lower than what everybody anticipated coming into the season. So just like we talked about some adjustments that JB Bickerstaff can make, I think if you're the Milwaukee Bucks organization, you turn to Doc Rivers hoping that he can solve whatever issues are ailing Milwaukee and be able to better utilize the skills of their offensive players. And then also to sort of organize them on defense and get them back to the level defensively where they've been. But the Bucks, for the first time, I would say in the last 3, 4, 5 years, even as a regular season team, I feel like they're more vulnerable than they have been, just because in the past, you could always hang your hat on defense showing up. And even if you didn't shoot it as well, if your defense is there, it makes it easier to win games. That's what they don't have this year. So if they have a poor offensive game, more often than not, they're getting beat as a result of that. So look, you could tell me at the end of the season in June that Milwaukee won the NBA championship. I wouldn't be that surprised. You could also tell me at this point that, hey, Milwaukee's going to be the 4 seed behind the Cavs and Knicks. And I think I could buy that too. So this team has a lot of questions to answer, and they got to figure out how to maximize what Dame brings to the table. And look, he hasn't been up to, I bet if you had to talk to him, that he would say he hasn't lived up to his own expectations for himself. But certainly I think Milwaukee thought they were getting more from him offensively on a consistent basis. And as you said, he's been very inconsistent. So I think Milwaukee, could the Cavs finish ahead of Milwaukee? I think the answer to that is certainly yes, based on what we've seen to this point in the season. There's not really been a sign that they're going to run away and hide for the second seed or challenge Boston for the number one seed. That just isn't happening.
Yep.
Next team up is the Knicks. And the Knicks right now are missing Randall. They're missing Mitchell Robinson. You got Brunson, who, as we talked about earlier, went down with an ankle sprain. How serious that is, I have no idea. Seems like he's going to be fine, since he was, as was reported, was walking out of the locker room without crutches and without a boot on his foot. But the Knicks have been outstanding. They've been just as hot as the Cavs. I think the question with the Knicks is the same way it is with the Cavs at this point. Are those two teams regular season teams where they play really hard, they've got lots of good players, but when it comes down to a playoff series against one of the top 2 or 3 seeds in each conference, can Jalen Brunson, who's clearly your best player, how does Jalen Brunson stack up against the best players on the best teams come playoff time? And I think at his size, it's tough. He's a liability defensively. And as good as he is, I still maintain, and I've said this on the podcast over the years numerous times, that I think when you're, and I think what's Brunson, maybe 6'1", 6'2", maybe. I think when a small guard is your number one guy who drives everything, I think it gets really tough because NBA teams have a lot of big, long, athletic 6'6" to 6'9" guys with long arms that move their feet and can really make things tough on a little guy. And look, I know Brunson's had a great season. He probably deserved to be an all-star starter instead of Dame. But I still think the Knicks have to – I don't think that their high-end talent is as good as some of these other teams' high-end talent. But I do think that they're going to be a team in the regular season that is going to challenge for that number two seed because Tibbs is not going to let off the gas. He's going to keep pushing his guys as much as he possibly can.
And he's going to keep bringing – and he's going to keep playing Taj Gibson? He's going to sign Taj Gibson?
He's going to try. He's going to try. Hey, he might be playing Taj when Taj is 58 and Tibbs is 97. So
who will have more longevity in the NBA, Taj Gibson or LeBron James? Who will be playing?
It remains to be seen. And then the last thing I'll say about the Knicks is I know that at least my initial reaction to the OG Anunoby trade was meh. I'm not sure it really moves the needle for either team. And clearly through 15 games, I have been proven extremely, extremely wrong. And
I've been proven wrong as well because I said the same thing, Mike. I thought it was a lateral move, really.
But it hasn't been. I mean, it really hasn't been. Anunoby has been great. He's shot the ball really well. It seems like he's just kind of locked everybody now into positions and roles where they know exactly what they have to do. They know exactly where they're supposed to be. They know exactly what their assignments are. And it just has solidified who the Knicks are as a team. When they get healthy, get Randall back. I don't know if Mitchell Robinson is going to come back this season. I read some stuff that there's a chance that maybe he's going to not make it back in time for the playoffs, which would be a blow, certainly, to the Knicks' playoff chances. Mitchell Robinson single-handedly destroyed the Cavs front court last year in round one. So it remains to be seen. But I think the Knicks are going to be right there competing for a four seed. I think the four teams that are in those four slots, I don't know what the order is going to be, but I don't see anybody below that. And Philly's the other team that I think most people thought was a, if not an inner ring contender, but certainly a team that could make some noise to win the title, depending upon how you felt about Joel Embiid. But now without him, I just think Philly becomes, they're going to be battling with the Pacers and the Heat for those 5-6 automatic playoff bursts, and which of those three teams is going to get stuck in the play-in. Philly has an advantage. They're four games up right now on the Heat, but at some point you got to believe Miami's going to start putting it together and start moving up the standings because it's just what they do. It's just what they do. And so,
yeah.
Look, I think the two seed is certainly there for the Cavs. It certainly is. Like I said, if they come out of February with only one or two losses, now you're looking at they could be four. Let's say they're 42. Let's say they go 10-2. I don't know exactly how many games they have, but let's say they go 10-2. Now you're 42-18 with 22 games left. Even if you go 500 the rest of that way, that's 53 wins. 53 wins is going to put you
in the conversation.
Second. Yeah. I would say you're going to probably be second or third in the conference if you get to 53 wins. And look, to me, that doesn't seem unrealistic when you look at what they have in February. And then, as we said, the schedule clearly gets tougher in March and the beginning of April. But if all you got to do is go 500, not that I'd be advocating for them to, hey, let's shut it down. We can win 53 games and go 11-11 over our last 22. I don't think that's what they want to do. But I guess the point is that you talk about having a really great month of February and you're setting yourself up to be able to do some really good things in terms of regular season basketball. And then the bottom line is right with the Cavs that they can do all they want in the regular season, but this team,
we need to see
the way that they laid
it. We need to see it. in the playoffs. Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, we need to see it in the playoffs. We need to see it in the playoffs. Are the Cavs going to – the Cavs are not going to do anything at the trade deadline. There's nothing that they can do. You haven't heard anything or seen anything.
No.
The Cavs are not being mentioned in any national news story. There's nothing about the Cavs being interested in anyone, looking to sell anything.
The only thing that I have read would be they might be interested in someone on the buyout market. Now, who that someone is, I don't know. But that's the only thing I've heard, Mike.
The only thing I heard, too, is that they might have interest in Royce O'Neal because of his previous relationship with Donovan Mitchell in Utah, that the two of them may be friends and that Royce O'Neal could be another wing 3-and-D potential guy that you could bring in if you could get him for a low price, if you could trade a couple of second-round picks or whatever for him. Then maybe that might make sense. I'm not sure that the Nets, nobody knows what the Nets are going to do at this point, because the Nets don't own their own draft picks. So all that stuff went to Houston. So there's no point in the Nets tanking because.
You mean, wait a second. What did they get for that, Mike? Was it that they got for that pick? Is it a member of the team that is now in first place in the West, the Los Angeles Clippers?
Ooh, man, we'll get to the Western Conference here.
Are we going to?
I mean, I know we've done 40 minutes on the Eastern Conference, but there's probably a few things to touch on in the Western Conference. At least a little bit. Let's frame it in the context of trades. Let's.
Pull out your sheet.
Our sheet is kind of irrelevant because we talked more about stars. But so here's the guys that in one of our preseason pods that we talked about, could these guys potentially move, whether it was through free agency or trade? So these are the names on the list. And I don't think very many of these guys are going to be on the move. In fact, I would guess that there's only one even remotely potential guy that could be on the trade block, and two of them have already been traded. So the two guys that have already been traded, James Harden, both you and I accurately predicted he would end up on the Clippers. So this was pre all any moves that have happened. This was back in the fall. Then we also had Pascal Siakam being traded. Unfortunately, both of us were wrong on where we thought he would be. You had him staying in Toronto. I had him going to Sacramento. So there was some rumor that maybe Sacramento was interested, but obviously they didn't pull the trigger, and Indiana did. So those are the two guys to this point that have been traded. And then the rest of the list, Giannis, this was before he signed his extension. So you had him going to the Knicks. I had him to Oklahoma City, neither of which is going to happen. Embiid, I said he was going to end up on the Knicks. You said he's going to stay in Philly. Who knows, right? Come this summer and what his knee is, more likely that he's going to stay in Philly than go anywhere else. So I'd say you're probably right there. Damian Lillard, this is the one we were wrong on. We both had him going to the Heat. He obviously went to the Bucks. Donovan Mitchell, I had him to the Knicks, which is still not completely ruled out. Although I will say that I went to the game last night against Sacramento in person, and you and I have both watched enough
inside Cavs sources. Basketball.
Inside sources. I look at Donovan Mitchell, and I know earlier in the fall, I talked about, hey, maybe it's time to trade him. And in all honesty, I don't think it would be a horrendous move to trade him, depending upon what you get. And I think you'd get a lot of good stuff back for him. Obviously, they're not going to do that. I don't want them to do that at this point. I said when we were discussing it that the front office, I think, wanted to see this group together one more time before they completely pulled the plug on the fact that these four guys can't effectively play together. But let's face it, there's still the possibility that come this summer, Donovan says, hey, I'm not re-signing in Cleveland. He could still end up a Knicks. So I have him going to the Knicks. You have him on the Cavs. LeBron.
And we did that we said a year from now, right? We said a year from now.
September 19th, 2024 is the date that we're looking at where these guys are going to be. LeBron, we both had him on the Lakers. There was clearly some speculation earlier this week when LeBron was wearing his New York Knicks colored outfit into the Garden, and then he was doing his post-game interview with the Knicks towel draped over his shoulder and the hourglass and all those things that it was bandied about for a day or two that maybe LeBron was agitating for him to be traded. It was also talked that maybe he was going to be traded by the Lakers, where it wasn't a LeBron request, but instead the Lakers were just going to deal LeBron and try to get a good deal. But then that was kind of, those rumors have been tamped down here at the beginning of the week heading into the trade deadline. So I don't know what the Lakers are going to do, but, and I don't see LeBron leaving the Lakers, but who knows? Who knows? He had some quotes tonight that basically said, we got to play with the guys that we have. I like what we have. There's no question for me that who we have is enough to do what we want to do. And so with LeBron, you never know. You can never tell what the guy's thinking or what he really means or all his subtweeting and emojis and everything else. I don't know. None of it makes sense. But anyway, we had him going to the Lakers. Zion's not going to get traded. I had him to the Wizards. You had him to the Celtics. Kawhi, you had him retiring or staying with the Clippers. Good call by you. I guess that's one you got right, because Kawhi is clearly going to be there next fall. I had him going to Memphis pre-Ja injury. Luka, we both have him staying in Dallas for next year. Trae Young is the only guy, I think, really realistically out of this that, and I don't know how realistic it is, but he's the only guy on this whole list that I've heard really tossed in any trade rumors recently. I had him going to the Timberwolves. You had him going to the Knicks. I don't think Trae Young gets moved. I think Atlanta still thinks that they can build something around Trae Young. I'm not sure that's right, but we'll see. Siakam, we had it wrong. I had him to the Kings. Like I said, you had him to Toronto. Yeah, and then Karl-Anthony Towns was the last guy. With Minnesota at the top of the Western Conference, they're not trading him, but I had him going to the Hawks and you had him going to the Spurs. I mean, they're Minnesota's not trading Karl-Anthony Towns. So I don't know. To me, I guess the most interesting name out there is DeJounte Murray, and I'm not sure that DeJounte Murray swings any title implications for any team. He might make a team better, but if the Lakers suddenly turned D'Angelo Russell into DeJounte Murray, I'm not marking them down and planning an itinerary for them in the Western Conference Finals. Let's put it that way.
What?
I'm not.
Yeah, I agree.
I'm not.
I know.
What I am doing
is
using magic mind, Jason.
Oh, yeah? And
I will tell you. Yeah, I will tell you that magic mind today came in very handy, because I'm going to give you a rundown of my day today. And it'll give you a little bit of an idea. It's currently 12:06 a.m. So today I had my longest day of teaching at school. So full schedule, two of my most challenging classes, a kindergarten class and a sixth grade class. Then on my drive home from work today, there was an accident on the highway. So that was a 2-hour commute rather than my normal 45 minutes. Then I got home and I immediately drove to my daughter Madeline's basketball game, which started late because the team that she was playing against was trapped in the same traffic jam that I was. Well, it wasn't the team she was playing against. It was a team that was playing before her that was trapped.
Because they're in the tournament, right? Is that accurate, Mike?
They're in the tournament. Yes, they're in the tournament. They're in the tournament. So went there, and then that game started late. And then I came home, and then our dishwasher broke. So I was drying and washing dishes that were in the dishwasher standing up. And then almost immediately after that was over, it was time for us to get on our podcast. So bottom line here is,
oh, you forgot about the Spanish review, Mike. You had to do some Spanish review.
I forgot the Spanish. Well, I didn't do the Spanish review. My wife was doing the Spanish review with my son, but I had to stay awake through the Spanish review so we could start the podcast. And what helped me to get through that was Magic Mind. And since I've been using it, it really has helped me on days like this where it feels like I never get a minute's downtime. And I just drink that little shot of Magic Mind and boom, I feel like I'm ready to go and I'm dialed back in and focused, especially when we sit down late at night to do one of these podcasts. It's really worked for me. So if you have a chance to get out there and grab some Magic Mind, I highly recommend that our listeners do that. I know it's done the same for you. when you've had days like this, which we all.
Well, I had a day today, Mike. Let's just say it, both my partner teachers were out, so I had substitutes. And
okay, that's always a fun.
And then my IS had to the sub for my IS had to get pulled to a classroom, so I didn't have an IS who was my co-teacher for two of my classes. I had a day today, Mike, and I really had to focus in on what I needed to do was best for the kids and get through the lesson. We're talking about elapsed time, and some kids might benefit from Magic Mind to focus up on elapsed time, because it was a little rough out there. The rough waters
time,
out there,
time
Mike.
Time was elapsing,
and I don't know how much there wasn't osmosis happening where the knowledge was coming into a few of the children, but that's okay. It's on day one of us doing that, so we're going to work towards that tomorrow. But it was definitely a day, Mike. It was definitely a day. So,
all right. So, all that being said, to our listeners, magicmind.com/hoopheads, and you can use the code hoopheads20 to get 20% off a subscription of Magic Mind. And if you are near a Sprouts market, which I don't think we have any of those here in the Cleveland area, but I know they're scattered throughout the country. But Magic Mind is carried in Sprouts markets. You go and try it out, check it out, and then use that hoopheads20 at magicmind.com to get 20% off a future subscription of Magic Mind. So, all right, back to the NBA. And trades, I don't think, as I said, DeJounte Murray, I don't think he moves the needle. I don't know who's out there that I haven't heard anything that really to me is super earth shattering as far as like big moves. It seems like most of these teams that are in contention are looking to make moves around the fringes, other than that LeBron trade rumor that we mentioned earlier, which was quickly shot down by Rich Paul, when he basically stated, we're not asking for a trade and LeBron is not getting traded. So I don't know what to make of this trade deadline. There could be lots of deals going on, but I think they're all going to be small. I think they're all going to be small if anything happens.
Yeah. I'm betting that there's not going to be anything big, Mike. I just don't see it. There are too many bad teams that are in the running, and I don't think that the draft is worth tanking, and those teams that are bad don't have their draft picks or lack the draft capital or equity to try to do anything. I mean, how bad this is, like, and we haven't even talked about like the LaVine injury, whether that's that was the guy that I think could have been traded. Okay. Cause there had been rumors, but his injury,
I mean, we talked about it a little bit before. Does he move the needle in any meaningful way for?
I think if you put him on the Lakers, I think that was a move that would actually probably have helped them. I think that's about the only move, just because they could have had some depth at that position. Like LaVine's is solid enough that I think he could have theoretically been helpful. But I agree with you that I don't know that it wasn't a done for sure thing. It wasn't like, I really believe this is going to happen. Could have it helped? Yes. But like, even when you look at that, even the Chicago Bulls without playing terrible. Okay. And they're in the play-in right now. I mean, cause you look at the Eastern Conference and the bottom, Detroit, Washington, Charlotte are pitiful. Toronto's kind of mailing it in, right? I mean, they traded Siakam.
Scottie Barnes, all-star, man. What about that?
What a joke.
Come on, man.
Listen,
first
you rob Mobley of Rookie of the Year. Now you're going to put Scottie Barnes in. What's the reason? Because no one else on the team from Canada is on the roster, so we're going to bring that guy. Jared Allen's continuing to get snubbed. What a joke. I'm out. All-star game.
I didn't like the Scottie Barnes over Jared
Listen,
Allen.
I get through Trey like Young. It. Trey Young's having a good stat season. Like I at least understand that. Scottie Barnes compared to Jared Allen, give me a break. I'm annoyed.
Look, all right, let me ask you this. If you look at all the teams that are sort of out of contention, is there anybody that is there anybody really good on the trade market that any teams want? I just keep coming back to, I feel like what's available are role players, are guys who are going to be like the seventh or eighth man for a team. I just don't know who's trading somebody who has a ton of value. It just doesn't, unless something comes out of nowhere.
I mean,
it doesn't feel like you're getting anything.
I mean, Spurs, no. Portland, no. I'm looking in the Western Conference.
I agree.
Does Memphis have anyone they're willing to trade or that's available? I mean,
no, like, I don't think so. I mean, they're not trading Bane or Jaren Jackson Jr. So other than that, you're talking role players.
Houston? No, right?
Jalen Green is the one name that I've heard. Now, again, does Jalen Green move the needle for a contender? No, I think if Houston's trying to move Jalen Green, they're probably trying to move Jalen Green for a combination of maybe a decent to better than decent young player and maybe some draft picks. That's the one name I've heard from Houston, but Jalen Green, I think, had 30 tonight against the Pacers. Not that that's an accomplishment against their defense, but I don't see Houston giving up on Jalen Green already with a guy that has that kind of explosive athletic talent to say, hey, who came in 1 year out of the G League. You got to give the guy some time, I think, to figure it out. And I know they want to win, and this is the first year in many seasons that they're actually trying to do that. But I still don't think you punt on the potential of what Jalen Green could be just because of the athleticism that he has. There just isn't many guys in the league, even at this highest of level, who are the type of athlete that he is. So
I guess
Jalen Green doesn't make a contender better.
Does Golden State have anyone that would be worthwhile for someone?
Probably not. Clay's
not worth anyone money. He makes too much money, right?
Makes too much money. And this version of Clay, he's not going to start on a contending team. You're talking about going to another program, going to another place, not with the Warriors where they don't have the same history with them. Those teams would be asking Klay Thompson to come off the bench. Now, could he do that? Sure. But is he a guy who's going to alter the course of what a contending team is doing? I don't think so. You could say the same thing for Draymond, right? If you got the clean version of Draymond, the very, very best version of Draymond and his best behavior, could he be a difference maker for a title contender? Maybe. But at this point, do you trust that that's the Draymond Green that you're going to get if you trade for him? I would have to think no. And now you're into play-in teams, right? I think Utah potentially could sell, but they're not going to trade. Why would you trade Markkanen? They're not going to trade Markkanen. So now you're looking at Kelly Olynyk, Jordan Clarkson, Sexton. Fine players. Fine players, but not big names, not guys that are really going to turn the entire fortune of a team around where you're going to go, oh, that team was the fifth best team in the West. Now suddenly they're number one because they got Jordan Clarkson. That's not really, I don't think.
He loves to shoot, though.
He does. He does love to shoot. I'll give him that. And then above Utah, everybody else is a buyer. Yep. I don't think there's any team in the top nine that are looking to sell and get worse. All those teams are trying to win. So, yeah, I don't know what you do over there with big names in the West. I just don't think there are any.
Hey, coaches, we know you're invested in the next generation of athletes. So why not give them the star treatment this season with Game Changer? Introducing Game Changer, a free app that provides you with data to make strategic coaching decisions and to deliver memorable moments to your team and its fans. Engage your players, empower your coaching decisions, and give parents the thrill of watching every play unfold in real time this season. Download Game Changer now on iOS or Android. Game Changer equips your team with the tools they need to succeed. Download it today and make this season one for the books. Game Changer. Stream. Score. Connect. Learn more at gc.com/hoopheads. That's gc.com/hoopheads.
Then you look at the Eastern Conference, you do the same thing. Detroit, Washington, Charlotte. I mean, maybe Detroit, if you can fleece them out of one of their young guys, that whatever, you can offer them something. Maybe you could get Jaden Ivey. Maybe you could get Jalen Duren.
Oh, man, Jalen Duren. Did you see the little ride he took last night when he dunked it? And was he dunked it and was like riding on another, like he was like,
taking a ride on somebody's shoulders.
It was like a shoulder ride.
Nice.
It's pretty good, Mike. It was pretty good. It was pretty good.
Charlotte could, I guess, deal Miles Bridges. A lot of baggage that comes along with that. We don't even need to discuss that in any detail, but I think Miles Bridges probably could be available from Charlotte, but does he make a huge difference?
No.
Probably not. Toronto, their two guys are already gone. They're going to clearly build around Scotty Barnes, so they're not probably getting rid of anybody else. I guess they could maybe trade Gary Trent, which could help a contender, but again, you're talking about a fringe player. Brooklyn, could they make Mikal Bridges available? Now you're talking about a little bit higher level of player, but still not a franchise-altering star player. Atlanta, could they offer Trey? And would a team want Trey? We've kind of debated that back and forth. Can you build a championship team around Trey Young? I'm dubious that a 6'2 dude who doesn't play any defense, that's a lot to ask.
And he's been really bad. His team, they've been really bad on defense lately. The Hawks. Yeah, they've been so bad. Yeah,
they're regularly giving up 130, 140 points. And at some point, Trey Young, you got to look in the mirror and just be like, hey, I know I'm not going to be good defensively, but I got to at least give a little bit more effort. Yeah, I got to play a little bit harder. And then Chicago, I mean, I guess somebody, a contender, could use DeRozan. If DeRozan is a starter for your team, I don't think you're a legitimate contender. Now, if DeRozan's your eighth guy, if he's your seventh guy, maybe that makes sense as a scorer off the bench, but it still doesn't excite me very much. And then I would say everybody above that is probably either a buyer or is going to do nothing. So I don't know. Maybe some trades will surprise me, but I expect if there's any action that it's going to be a lot of role player type 7th, 8th, 9th man guys going from one place to another, where teams feel like, hey, we just need one more guy for our rotation, or we need one specific guy with this skill set. And that's why we end up getting come Thursday for the trade deadline. I don't think we're getting any big giant trades.
I agree. I just don't see it happening. And they've made it more difficult to do the underhanded trades, right? They're basically the buyout. I mean, the buyout still can happen, but you can't do like anything under the table like a few years ago you used to be able to get away with. So I just don't see anything happening. There's some guys in the buyout market that'll be available, but And I'm kind of glad that the Cavs aren't even like seemingly talking. Now, could we be surprised at a left field? Maybe, but it would have to be a huge upgrade for me to even think about it. I just don't see how they could pull it off, quite frankly. So
yeah, you're talking about, they don't have any first round picks to trade. I don't even know what they have left in terms of second round picks. And there's not really, you're not going to trade players out more than likely. So could they, again, maybe pick up a fringe player that could be their ninth man? I guess, but I would expect that this roster will look pretty much the same on Friday as it does today.
And that's not a bad thing right now. I just don't, they're playing so well.
No, it's not. It's not. The way that they're playing at this point, I don't think you can argue at all with where the Cavaliers are, with where they're at. So.
All right, Mike, what else do you want to talk
about? Rubio?
What do you mean?
You see that?
Rubio? No, what about
it? Rubio rejoins Barcelona on a deal through the end of the season.
What?
Yep. Ricky Rubio signed a short-term contract with Barcelona on Tuesday, a month after he announced that his 12-year NBA career was over. Barcelona said the guard will return when he is ready. Now, maybe this is just ceremonial.
He'll play like a game or two and then be done.
there was no quotes in the article at all from Rubio in terms of what he's actually going to do. But the team said that his return to competition will come when the player himself decides that the time is right. So who knows? Maybe he goes back and wants to finish his career in Spain, which kudos to him if that ends up being the case.
Yeah. That's really just bizarre to me, though.
It is. I mean, it's definitely. But
is
I guess
concerning to you about the culture? I don't really have a problem. I feel like our culture is pretty good, but
I feel like it's good. I feel like it's more about he just sort of wants to go full circle in his career. He obviously became famous as part of the Spanish national team when he was 16, 17 years old. And so maybe the guy just had it with the rigors of the NBA and wanted to go home, finish his career where it started, and play basketball on a stage that where the scrutiny wasn't quite as high. And so that's what I would attribute it to. And again, they didn't say his return is imminent. They didn't say he was going to play next week. They didn't say he's been practicing. It was just he signed a contract and the player will return when he's ready. So that's pretty ambiguous. But all the best to Ricky Rubio. He was great for the Cavs while he was here and probably one of the best passers that the NBA has seen in terms of what I liked about Ricky Rubio was just that he could make the fancy pass, but he also made the simple pass. And sometimes there's
genius. He made the right pass, the right play, right? Yeah.
Sometimes there's genius in just being able to instantly recognize the right play and making it every single time. And that's Ricky Rubio. And if he's the guy who, man, if he ever would have developed his ability to shoot, and I know by the end of his career, he kind of did the Jason Kidd transformation where standing still, he could knock down threes, but he never just kind of got to the level as a shooter that as the game changed and the point guard's ability to shoot became more and more important, it made it more and more difficult to live with Rubio's lack of three-point shooting. So, but great career for Ricky Rubio.
For sure. Hall of Famer.
Hall of Famer.
I think, right? I mean, a lot of people get in the Hall of Fame nowadays.
Probably because of his international play, I would say. Like, if you were just talking straight, if the Hall of Fame was an NBA Hall of Fame, I'm not sure Ricky Rubio gets in. But because it's the Basketball Hall of Fame and includes international stuff, I think he's probably got a decent chance. He's probably got a decent chance to get in.
Okay.
All-Star Weekend, two things. You mentioned the dunk contest earlier. You want to read us off the contestants' names? You want to read us the contestants?
Your goal is not to fall asleep when I read this to you. Okay. You still awake? Are you still awake? All right, here we go.
I'm awake. Magic
Mac McClung, defending champion. Defending champion Mac McClung. I'm okay with that pick just because he did a good job. I know he's not a hostile name, but I thought he did a good job.
He's not in the league. Jalen, is he?
No, he's on the Osceola Magic.
Okay. All right. So we have so far we have a guy who's not even in the league. All right, keep going.
We got Jalen Brown. He's
first
at least
all-star since 20. First all-star since 2017, Jay, to participate in the all-star slam dunk contest.
Okay, well, how about this guy? Jamie Jacquez Jr. How do you say it? James, it's the Miami guy. Miami guy. What? And then we couldn't even get Obi Toppin. We got his brother. We couldn't even get Obi Toppin. We had to go with the bargain basement Jacob Toppin, who's unfortunately for him still. I'm pretty sure. And he's on the Knicks. Right, well, I'm pretty sure. Okay. Hold on, let me make sure.
I don't know. I never heard this before, so maybe it
Jacob
is.
Jacob Toppin. American basketball player. He's averaging 0 points, 0 rebounds, and 0.3 is. He's on a two-way contract with the Knicks. Okay, hold on. Personal life. Toppin's older brother, Obi, is also an NBA player.
Right, there you go. Okay. Right.
He went to Kentucky.
As soon as you texted me that, I just sent you the three Z emojis. The dunk contest.
You snooze, you lose, Mike. You snooze, you lose.
I know that we're running out of ideas and thoughts for what kind of dunks can be done. Like, I get that. But
I thought last year, I thought last year's dunk contest was good, Mike. I thought last year's dunk contest
was fine, right? It's fine, right? Like, it's fine. Like Mac McClung did some incredible, unbelievable dunks, but it's Mac McClung. He doesn't even play in the league. Like, it's just not.
Do you think exciting. If you participated, it would garner excitement, Mike?
If I participated, no, it would not garner any excitement whatsoever. It would garner less than nothing excitement because I don't know how low the hoop would have to be, even for me in my prime, to be able to do anything remotely like what these guys can do on 10-foot rims. It just comes down to you need stars, right? And you need the best dunkers in this thing in order to make it a show. And you need guys who are flamboyant, who have a personality. So Cal and I were talking about this because Cal's like, oh, this dunk contest isn't bad. Jaylen Brown's in there. He kind of had the same reaction as you, like Mac McClung. I'm like, dude, he's not even in the league. So then we started talking about if you could put together what four guys would you want to see? If you could pick any four, who's your four?
Who's my four?
Who's your four?
LeBron, still. I'd still want to see LeBron do it, right?
Really?
I'd still say LeBron.
Okay, I did not. LeBron was not one of my four. I could live with LeBron only because he was sort of the guy who initiated the death knell for the dunk contest by never participating in it. So, I guess if you could get LeBron to participate in it from that standpoint, just from a gawker's onlooking standpoint, I guess I don't think LeBron at this point in his career would have much chance of winning it, but okay, go for it. Keep going.
LeBron. This is the bad part, Mike. I don't even know who I'd want.
There's not that many. That's the thing. There's not that many great dunkers.
I think Donovan Mitchell could be a good dunk contest competition person.
He's been in a dunk contest before.
Yeah.
He's been in there before. He was okay.
I don't remember.
I'd say he was okay. He was okay when he was with Utah. Okay. Not great.
I don't know, Mike. I don't know.
One guy who won it before who's not a star, but I think you'd probably want him in it.
Who's that?
Aaron Gordon.
Okay.
Gordon's the dunk contest.
Yeah.
Gordon's not a star, but won the title with Denver. He's got enough of a name, plus the dunks. I think Aaron Gordon is the guy you want. So then the other three guys I would want. Now, one of them's hurt, Ja, right? You'd want to see Ja in the dunk contest. I think Ja would be spectacular at 6'2". Zion's your other guy. And then the last one I think you'd want is Anthony Edwards. To me, that's your four. Aaron Gordon, Zion Williamson, Ja Morant, and Anthony Edwards. Those are your four. But there's not really very many. Like when I started trying to go through and figure out like who else would I even want to consider, like there's not really, there's not that many big time. I just don't feel like there's that many big time dunkers. Like guys, you look at the stars, the top of the list, there's not guys who.
I mean, Jared Allen and Evan Mobley are dunk a lot in games, but they don't have any flashy dunks.
They're not dunk contest guys.
We don't need to see Rudy Gobert in the dunk contest again.
No, we do not. We do not need to see Rudy Gobert. To me, those are the guys. So I don't know. It's whatever.
Okay. That was the one thing on the All-Star game. Was there something else you wanted to say?
Yeah, there's one other thing. You see, they're playing on a glass floor.
What?
Yeah, glass floor, LED floor. Not for the All-Star game itself, but I'm pretty sure for all the All-Star Saturday stuff, the floor is going to be glass.
Glass or plexiglass?
Glass. 0.5 millimeter thick glass.
Someone going to get hurt? Like, what is this?
No,
what is this
NBA nonsense? The NBA has been wanting to use this for a number of years, and they finally felt like it was that the technology had gotten to the point where it could, that it was good enough and safe enough for the NBA players to play on.
This is dumb. Saturday. This is dumb.
So they can project stats.
Old Hickory's going to turn into old. I don't even know. Old Lindsay. I don't know.
They can make it look into all. No, they can make it look however they want to make it look. They can project stats and different things onto it. And so, yeah, it's going to be for Saturday night. It's a company out of Germany that manufactures it. And
I say Alf Wiedersehen to that.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll see. You're going to get a chance to look at it. Now I can't find the article because it was on the top headlines on ESPN, but now the top headlines have.
Maybe it was fake news.
I don't think so. I didn't read it on social media. I read it right there on the
Mike. All right. Let's end with this, Mike. Prediction for Sunday. I'm going with the Chiefs. It's the year of the Taylor Swift. I'm going with the Chiefs. What do you say?
I think it's the Chiefs. I don't.
I was really hoping you were going to be oppositional. Okay.
Nah, I don't like the 49ers, especially after beating the Lions last week. So here, NBA goes glass with the LED court. So let me just read this to you so you can enjoy. Part of All-Star Weekend in Indianapolis, including the entire All-Star Saturday night, will be played on a state-of-the-art full video LED court that will be installed at Lucas Oil Stadium. That means the skills competition, three-point contest, slam dunk, and the shooting matchup between Steph Curry and Sabrina Ionescu will take place on the glass floor. Gives us a little bit more range of what we can do as far as interactive graphics that happen on the floor, changing the floor design, changing the colors, really reacting to the play that happens on the court. So it's probably going to like light up when people dunk, the key will light up. We really feel good about the capabilities and what this provides us. We think it's going to be really impactful. The court developed by German company ASB Glass Floor has been used in events by FIBA. FIBA approved the usage of LED glass flooring in 2022. The league didn't reveal what the court costs other than it's more expensive than a wood surface. Yeah, no kidding. They've been considering it for a while. Andre Iguodala and Joe Dumars both signed off on it. It's actually two layers of laminated safety glass, each 5 millimeters thick. Surface is opaque, and all the designs will be provided by the LED panels. It plays almost exactly the same as wood does in terms of bounce and feel. So,
Mike, I forgot to bring up this other news. Did you see this? What's ESPN, that? Fox, and Warner Brothers Discovery are teaming up to create a new sports streaming service. They're going to take all three streaming and combine them for sports. It's going to be under one app, but if you have one of the subscriptions, you will have access to all of the streaming, which means I have to imagine, and they haven't gone into the nitty-gritty. I haven't seen anything yet.
What, but
I have
apps?
To imagine that means if you have HBO Max,
okay,
Hulu,
I don't have that. Okay, is Hulu, that with live TV
or ESPN Plus?
Okay, ESPN Plus, good. I got that. Perfect. I'm in, man.
You're in.
I'm in. That's all I need.
All right. This might be the longest NBA pod we've had in a while. So
yeah, there we go. There's a lot to talk about. There are a lot of little stories. I felt like, plus the Cavs have been rocking. So. It was fun to talk Cavs tonight, and hopefully we'll be back next week talking more Cavs and getting close to the All-Star break.
I'll make our All-Star predictions next week, Mike. All-Star predictions.
Yeah, maybe we'll have to do an emergency pod Thursday night when the Cavs trade Donovan Mitchell. We'll have to see what happens.
So. If the Cavs trade Donovan Mitchell, I might retire from the podcast, Mike. I might retire from the podcast.
That might be it. We might have to shut it down.
Yeah. All right.
Well, let's leave it there. Thanks to everyone for joining us tonight. Really appreciate it. And we will catch you on our next episode. Thanks.
Your first impression is everything when applying for a new coaching job. A professional coaching portfolio is the tool that highlights your coaching achievements and philosophies. And most of all, helps separate you and your abilities from the other applicants. The Coaching Portfolio Guide is an instructional membership-based website that helps you develop a personalized portfolio. Each section of the Portfolio Guide provides detailed instructions on how to organize your portfolio in a professional manner. The guide also provides sample documents for each section of your portfolio that you can copy, modify, and add to your personal portfolio. As a Hoopheads Pod listener, you can get your Coaching Portfolio Guide for just $25. Visit coachingportfolioguide.com/hoopheads to learn more.
Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads Podcast, presented by Head Start Basketball.